Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
Today we're honored to have as our guest an outstanding artist, violinist Maria Bachmann, who, along with her colleague pianist John Klibanoff, were recipients on October 4th of this year's Classical Recording Foundation Samuel Sanders Collaborative Artists Award. We spoke very, very candidly about Ms. Bachmann's career and all of the things that she is participating in, and it was really quite astounding and delightful all at once. Welcome to Crossover, Maria.
Thank you.
Exciting and absolutely stunning in most all of your recordings, I must say. I have to tell you that I was really blown away by your newest, I think this is your most recent recording.
Yes.
The Red Violin, which of course takes the name from, I guess, the film and the work by John Carigliano. Tell us a little bit about how you put this album together.
Well, I wanted to put together works which I felt would be complementary to John Carigliano's The Red Violin, which, by the way, on this disc we do in the violin piano version, not orchestral version. And John Carigliano made that arrangement himself. And it's magnificent. But I thought, you know, to call an album The Red Violin, the other works on it also have to have something, some similarity to this or some relationship to The Red Violin work itself. And I chose works by a good friend of mine, a composer named Paul Moravec, who's a younger composer, recently won Pulitzer Prize.
Yes.
Has written quite a number of works for me, about 15 or 20 at this point. Also works by Aaron Copland. Also Maurice Ravel's wonderful sonata, and some short works by George Gershwin.
Now, and the arrangements of the Gershwin, are they?
They're not published. They actually are arrangements which I have sort of tinkered with, Heifetz's arrangements. They were inspired by Heifetz's arrangements, but I changed a lot of things, added things, and John Klibanoff, my pianist on the album, also does a lot of things. So when you look at what Heifetz's arrangements are, there it's based on that, but loosely.
And also they're dated, Heifetz's arrangements,
yes,
and yours are not. Just quickly, Copland, the Nocturne is out of this world. I mean, it's unusual. You have such unusual works here. The Moravec is exciting, and the Evermore he wrote for your wedding. Is that correct?
That was a wedding gift for my husband and I, and it was just actually, our wedding was 2 days before Paul won the Pulitzer Prize and went off to Italy, and then he won the Pulitzer Prize. And it was an amazing time. And I think it's a beautiful love song.
It is just beautiful. Now, let's backtrack a little. You are a graduate of Curtis.
Yes.
And you won the Fritz Kreisler Award. That was for a graduating student?
Yes. Well, actually, a very funny thing happened was that the beginning of my last year at Curtis, I went to Vienna, Austria for the Fritz Kreisler Violin Competition, international competition, which I won. And there was a whole lot of publicity about that here in Philly when I, you know, won that. And I didn't know it, but every few years or so, they give, or at least they used to, Curtis used to give an award for an outstanding graduating violinist, and it was named after Fritz Kreisler. So when I graduated later that season or that year, they gave me that award from Curtis. And so that was quite an honor to receive that, because, as you know, Curtis is a wonderful school, and everybody there is really terrific.
Well, I have to say that you are, I would say, a stellar example. It's not only the playing, the passion, the intensity, the sound that you get. It's really terribly impressive. And I'm sure you've heard that before. You're very, very experienced. You've been doing a lot of things and you have numerous albums, but this one really knocked my socks off. And I have to say that you should be very, very proud of it. It's very accessible, yet it's intellectually challenging, the works on here. And of course, the performance by both you and John Klibanoff, pianist, are just stellar. Now let's talk a little bit about, what you do as a soloist. And then you also have this trio. Is that right? Trio Solisti?
Yes. I have a sort of dual career, in that I do a fair amount of solo work. I tend to work with a lot of living composers. I've been working with Philip Glass, with John Carigliano, Paul Moravec often, other composers who are working write pieces for me currently, Kevin Putz, Lowell Lieberman. I do arranging as well myself. I studied with George Rochberg composition when I was a student, and I've done a bit of arranging as well. So I tend to live a lot in that world of new music and composers, but I could say I'm picky about the composers that I work with, although I work with a variety of styles of composition. And I don't believe in being prejudiced against a particular style of composition. What I do believe in is that you have to love the music that you're playing. And if you love it and believe in it, the audience will love it too.
And you transmit that in your interpretation, because you're reading the music the way you interpret it, and you are sending a message that is different. And again, we have this problem with contemporary music for the public. It seems to be a problem, and certainly in chamber works, it's difficult, you know, for accessibility for a non-professional. I mean, I think a lot of people go to concerts for, you know, to relax,
right.
You know, or to be inspired, of course. But you are, I think, on the forefront of educating the public in a sense, in the way that you choose your repertoire and the way you perform it. The Trio Solisti came out also with a new album, and I was taken, of course, since I love the tango, I was taken by the Piazzolla performance, I think. It was just something I said, wow, they really, really play beautifully. Tell us a little bit about that and how you perform that.
Well, that CD is called Cafe Music, and it came out just last year on Bridge Records, and is with my group Trio Solisti, a piano trio. And by the way, we're celebrating our 10th anniversary in 2011.
Goodness. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes. And our idea behind that CD was that, first of all, there is a piece on it written by Paul Schoenfield called Cafe Music. And we thought, well, actually, besides that title work, there are a lot of works and a really long history of music, let's say sort of crossover classical style of music being played in venues other than concert halls, namely restaurants, cafes, bars, wherever, especially in Europe. For hundreds of years, that's been going on. People like Beethoven and Brahms were inspired by that. And even in today's world, you know, there are classical musicians who are now going into jazz clubs, bars, restaurants, playing music. And it's not always classical. Some of it is classical. Some of it is semi-classical. So we thought, well, there's such a history of this. Why not put together a really interesting album of piano trio literature that we could, you know, call Cafe Music, that really works in that style?
That's also salon music, I think, certainly at the turn of the century. I mean, certainly in Europe and well before, but definitely at the turn of the century, that was the music that you heard. You heard reductions of operettas, and you heard, they called it salon music.
Yes.
And it's quite charming, I think. That sounds a little condescending, but there is an edge to it that it really just gets you, and it's singable, and it's easy to remember.
Yes.
And in many cases, I believe a lot of very fine players performed in the restaurants and the salons, you know, at that time.
And they still do. I've been to Eastern Europe myself and have heard musicians, and their facility and virtuosity is actually astounding. And that was another idea behind this particular album of ours, Cafe Music, that there is a real virtuosity and skill that is required to play this kind of music. So, and we also happen to love the music of Astor Piazzolla very, very much. As you can tell, half the album is devoted to his works.
Well, you should have devoted, as far as I'm concerned, you could have devoted the whole album to it. This was a man that I admired enormously.
Yes.
I mean, he just got it. He knew what he was doing, and he of course, changed the direction of the tango. And I know there are people that are not so happy about him in terms of their, you know, he broke the mold, you know, of what tango was in Argentina. But I do believe it's infectious, and the rhythm and the style of playing, of course, is very, very interesting. So, of course, this this came out, what year was this done?
This last year, 2009.
Okay, so this is available.
Yes.
Is it the Bridge label?
It's Bridge label. It's available on Amazon, you know, Barnes & Noble, all the, you know, usual suspects of places where you would purchase CDs.
And this, the Red Violin, was done when, in 2007?
Yes, 2007. That's also available everywhere, like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart even carries it.
My goodness, really. And what is
this? It's called Endeavor Classics, which is owned by Allegro. It's the parent company.
Yes.
Of that label.
Okay. So, so here we have you doing a lot of recording. You're also concertizing, is mm-hmm. that right?
Yes, a lot.
Tell us a little bit about your schedule.
Well, I would say I do anywhere between 60 and 80 concerts a year. A lot of it with my trio, and we tour around the country quite a bit. We sometimes have guest artists play with us, but mostly we do that kind of thing at our own festival, which is in Telluride, Colorado. We've just had our 8th annual festival there called Telluride Music Fest. And if anyone's interested in coming for a little vacation, it's a really great spot to come in the summertime, nice and cool. The altitude is high, but it's fantastic weather, dry and cool.
And the strings sound great, right?
Yeah. We have wonderful guests joining us, about 6 or 7 guest artists there every summer. And I also do concertos as well. In fact, recently here in Philadelphia, I premiered Paul Moravec's Violin Concerto in May 2010, a fabulous piece. And I did that with Orchestra 2001, and James Freeman is the conductor
yes,
of that
Yes, they are
group.
Very fine. Yes, yes.
And I've also recently premiered a double concerto by Philip Glass in The Hague, Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And that was with the Netherlands Dance Theater and the Orchestra of The Hague.
And is that on, you've recorded that?
And we have not recorded that yet. We will. We have not done the North American premieres of that work as yet either, so we will be doing that. And I play the Red Violin Concerto often. I also do other things like this. In a few weeks, I'm playing the Barber Violin Concerto
Which
for his
beautiful, beautiful
wonderful
thing, yes.
Anniversary coming up.
And where will that be?
In Wisconsin at the Peninsula Festival. And I do a lot of festival playing in the summertime, various places like going to Cape Cod and mm-hmm. Maine, Skaneateles, New York,
sure.
Wisconsin, Moab, Utah, various places.
You certainly see the world and the country
yes.
as well. You live where?
I live in New York City. I've been living there pretty much since I left school. Yeah.
So you have actually a concert career, and you have a chamber. You do chamber work, and you do some arranging or some writing.
A
as
little
well.
Bit of arranging. I have actually lately. I have not had time to do any arranging because I've been so swamped with the performing. But I've done quite a number of works for my group, for the trio to play. And one of our most popular arrangements, actually, which John really did. To start off with, and then Alexis and I chimed in with our suggestions and ideas, was Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, you might as well Ravel did it, and let's see.
Well, you know what? There's a Pictures at an Exhibition Society, which exists
really?
In the Midwest, and they keep a track of all the different arrangements and transcriptions that have been done of that work. And believe it or not, there's close to 600 different arrangements. Ravel's not the only one to orchestrate it. Many people have orchestrated it.
I know. Ashkenazi also did one. I remember that was
right.
a few years ago. But for trio?
Yes. Well, actually, we're not the first piano trio group to arrange it. There was a Russian group, which I don't think exists anymore, and it's not available. It's not published. Ours is not published either. But we've recorded it, and that tends to be one of our most popular works with audiences and with everyone, and they're surprised how beautifully it works for piano trio. But it makes sense because it was originally written for solo piano.
Yes, exactly. That's what
That's
it was.
Right.
Absolutely. I think people have forgotten that.
Exactly.
And yeah.
So our arrangement really was the idea of keeping the intimacy mm-hmm. of that solo piano work, but by adding the 2 strings with our group, it really expands the possibilities by a lot. I mean, it doesn't sound like an orchestra, so you can't expect that. but it really expands the possibilities.
Yeah, in a sense, I think it's true to its origin as a trio, much more so than an orchestral arrangement. I really love the orchestral arrangement.
Of course,
you've got
Ravel
the piano
too.
For the great gate, so
that's right.
your artists, everyone that you work with, I'm so impressed. I really have to say. I mean, there are a lot of musicians around. There's a lot of music around, but I was extremely taken with you and your artistry, and I'm so thrilled that you could come and speak with us. Is there anything
Thank you
want to?
Yes, there are some new things on the horizons. I have a new CD with John Klebanoff. It's actually our fifth recital album, which will be coming out this fall, September or October 2010. And it will include the world premiere recording of Philip Glass's sonata for violin and piano. And this is the first sonata he's ever written for violin and piano. And he wrote it for us. It was commissioned for us by a wonderful couple in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Martin Murray and Lucy Miller Murray. And it was for the occasion of her 70th birthday. So it was a gift of love. And
well, you've had a few gifts of love. Is it Evermore?
Yes.
Again, that's beautiful. That was written for you with love. And this got a commission with love. And I guess people feel that the way you play, I guess, says what they wanted the music to say. And I think that's quite a flattering, you know, compliment to you.
Well,
and inspiring as well. What else is on the horizon? I don't know how you do it all, but.
As I mentioned, my Trio Solisi's anniversary, 10th anniversary is coming up next year in 2011. We will be having two new recordings coming out next year, Dvorak trios for the anniversary of Antonin Dvorak, as well as a wonderful work with soprano by composer Paul Moravec, and it's called Vita Brevis. That will be coming out on Naxos. So a lot of exciting CDs and works coming out. I'm also actually a member of a group called the Glass Chamber Players, and we perform new works by Philip Glass paired with standard chamber music repertoire and pieces that make sense, you know, because often people think that contemporary composers sort of live in their own world, but they don't. They have connections and relationships to composers of the past. And Philip is no different. He's very much influenced by composers like César Franck and
Johann Sebastian Bach. Is he still minimalist? I mean, is he still progressed in style?
He is. However, it's not the sort of really extreme minimalism that he did in his earlier years. He has, in fact, many people say that he's writing very romantically now. The second movement of the violin piano sonata, which is a three-movement work, is so romantic. It sounds really like Prokofiev to me. It still sounds like Philip, but on the other hand, you question when you hear it. If you don't know that it's written by Philip, you would never guess that it was written by Philip Glass.
I spoke with him. I interviewed him, and mm-hmm. We had a very wonderful conversation. He also went to Juilliard, and he mm-hmm. also was a product of the L&M, which was Literature and Materials of Music, which was the new way of teaching harmony and theory. And we both laughed about it because after all was said and done, we wound up going back to the old method. Do you feel, apropos of that, do you feel that the new music is becoming less, how can I say this, more tonal, more accessible. I use that word again. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a change or a return to a more melodic way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different kind of composition that we are getting now with the new composers.
Well, I agree. It seems to me that the younger composers generally are really getting back to tonality, but writing with a fresh voice. And Paul Moravec is a perfect example of that. He writes very tonal music, but it just is so refreshing and so mm-hmm. wonderful to listen to, and audiences get so excited by it, and they're so into it. That's what's really great to see. But yes, in general, I would say
there's a change.
There is sort of a shift now just music that you can listen to that is maybe perhaps a little more accessible. You might be able to sing back a melody, perhaps.
Well, it doesn't really even have
not
to be that, but
that,
I think it's the mood and the
yeah.
whole texture and everything. It's yeah. not as shocking. It's not as to the ear for an untrained ear. And that seems to be a problem generally with repertoire for orchestras that they are wrestling with.
Yes.
Now, have you played with Spano?
I did work with Robert Spano.
Oh, he's amazing.
Many years ago, yes.
Yes. And now, are you going to be doing any orchestral appearances here live or in the area?
Well, I just played in Philadelphia, so not in the near future, but I will be having some concerts coming up, either with my trio or recital, sometime in the 2010-11 season, working on figuring out some dates right now. So probably in the spring of 2011, I'll be here playing locally.
And we'll have to run and hear you. But just a quickie on your opinion of the music business. Has it changed a great deal? It's very challenging for musicians that are entering the business.
Yes.
Any words of wisdom or insights, let's say? Mm.
Well, yes, it is tougher, I think, than it ever used to be. There are a great number of wonderful artists out there, you know, trying to do their craft
in, sure,
and to break in and to keep their careers going as well. I think the most important thing is to really to work hard to find your own voice, to find what music it is you really love and you feel you're very good at. Don't try to do everything. I don't play Paganini, for instance. I don't tend to gravitate towards the incredibly flashy virtuosic repertoire like Paganini or Wieniawski or that kind of thing. I think there are people who play that repertoire much better than I do. But when I play a work and decide to perform it or record it, it's because I know I'm good at it and I really love it and I feel that I can bring something special to it, a different voice of some kind. And to be inventive, I think, is a very important key thing these days too. As you mentioned in my Red Violin CD, for instance, pairing
yes.
interesting new works that you love and believe in with really great works of the past, I think is the way to keep music fresh. Because we can't only keep listening to the music that was written hundreds of years ago. We do have to have new music. And there's some wonderful, really fantastic, lots of fantastic composers out there writing fantastic new music. So if you can somehow keep it fresh in that way by mixing things up a little bit.
I think also the similarity. I mean, you can identify
yes.
similarities.
Yes.
But for the audience, these performances are extremely virtuosic. I think your moto perpetuo or whatever it is of the Ravel is just unbelievable. And I mean, your playing it's very virtuosic. When you say you don't play some of the flashier things, I will hesitate.
Okay.
For the audience, she will take your breath away. I'm so terribly impressed and so thrilled that you could come here.
Well, thank you
on
so
your
much
very
for having
busy
me.
Schedule. Yeah.
It's a pleasure. This is my hometown, Philadelphia. I still have family here. I went to school here, so it's wonderful.